This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. We start with Nora Ahmed, the legal director for the Louisiana American Civil Liberties Union. We're talking primarily about a Texas law that bans most abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy that went into effect this month, despite the 1973 Supreme Court Roe v. Wade decision that established a constitutional right to the procedure. It makes Texas the most restrictive state in the nation in terms of access to abortion services. The law bans abortions once cardiac activity can be detected in the embryo, typically occurring around the 6 weeks of pregnancy, and that's so early in a pregnancy that many women don't even know they're pregnant. By the time pregnant women miss their period, usually a woman is 4 weeks pregnant, as doctors generally define it. And so this is a law that has sweeping implications. The Supreme Court voted 5-4 not to block the law from being implemented. And Nora Ahmed is here to talk about not only what's going on in Texas, but also how this will apply in other states, including Louisiana. Good morning, Nora.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Doing well. It's good to talk with you. What are your thoughts about where this is going? Is this going to be a harbinger of things to come?
Unfortunately, it will be just that. We know that there are a number of states that are currently contemplating what they can do right now to copy Texas's law because they know the Supreme Court, by saying they won't do anything, has effectively stated that abortion bans at the six-week mark are constitutional, when in fact we know they're not. And while the Supreme Court argued that they weren't talking about the constitutionality of the law by remaining silent on allowing it to go into effect, they're allowing Texas and now other states to really start thinking about how to bypass the United States Constitution. And one potential bit of luck we have is we are seeing the Justice Department get involved in suing the state of Texas, saying that what they are doing violates the Supremacy Clause and the federal government's ability to regulate the country as it stands with all of the federal programs they have running throughout the country and specifically in the state of Texas.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number for Nora Ahmed, the ACLU Louisiana Legal Director. And you can send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. And here's one asking whether the law makes exceptions for pregnancies resulting from rape or incest or to protect the life of the mother.
So this particular law in Texas does not make those exceptions, though it claims that there are certain medical emergencies that might be allowed to bypass that law. But that is a great question, and it is extraordinarily scary for all women to understand that that type of conduct would not even be considered as something that we need to prohibit by virtue of this law.
This was Senate Bill 8 and amounts to nearly a complete ban on abortions in the state. Texas is, of course, a southern state, SEC member. Politics similar in that state based on national elections as Louisiana. What happens in our state? Do you think we're going to follow Texas?
We have not seen a replicated bill just yet, but understanding that Louisiana recently tried to enact what one would refer to as a heartbeat bill, which is very similar to the Texas law, it is likely that is heavily under discussion and that, sadly, we may see something very similar to that Texas law here in Louisiana.
And other states, including Mississippi, our neighbor on the other side in Georgia and Kentucky and Ohio, they have passed heartbeat laws that ban abortion once cardiac activity can be detected on an ultrasound. Now, with abortions being restricted in Texas and Mississippi, I would imagine the few clinics that are remaining in Louisiana may be getting more attention than they did before.
they are getting that attention. We know that the day the law went into effect in Texas, that clinics in Louisiana started getting an innumerable amount of calls that they had not seen prior to that, because people are now trying to understand how do they get out of Texas if they're beyond that 6-week mark. So we are seeing a direct impact on our clinics here in this state, and that may unfortunately only prompt our state legislature to consider what it can do to unfortunately move those women even further. And so if you look at what the Justice Department said and the work of our ACLU affiliate in Texas, we're talking about women traveling nearly 300 miles to get an abortion. And if you're talking about states that already have mandates where you have to visit a clinic more than once, you're putting a lot of cost on the women who already might not have the funding for the abortion itself to travel.
The governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, says starting now, as in when the law went into effect a few weeks ago, every unborn child with a heartbeat will be protected from the ravages of abortion. President Joe Biden, a devout Catholic, says in a statement that the law blatantly violates the constitutional right established under Roe v. Wade and has been upheld as a precedent for nearly half a century. He says the law outrageously gives citizens the power to bring lawsuits against anyone they believe who has helped another person get an abortion. And, Nora, we've already seen that, haven't we?
We've seen that. We are talking about allowing private citizens to become bounty hunters to identify those individuals who are getting abortions and then to prohibit the abortion providers and anyone who helps them from ever helping anyone again in that situation.
Well, clinics, people who work there and operate them say the law will rule out about 85% abortions in Texas, force many clinics to close. Planned Parenthood is among the abortion providers that have stopped scheduling abortions beyond 6 weeks from conception. And it was a mad scene in Texas when this law went into effect at 10 o'clock on the date it was imposed. 27 women were still in waiting rooms, according to the Associated Press, at one clinic, leaving doctors crying and scrambling over whether they would see all of them in time. The last abortion at one of the clinics finished at 11:56 p.m. in Fort Worth. And anti-abortion activists were outside shining bright lights in the parking lot after dark looking for wrongdoing and twice called police. So this country is really divided on this issue, no doubt, maybe more so than ever. And some of the same people, Nora, who are saying that women do not have this right are also saying they have the right not to be vaccinated. It is an interesting juxtaposition.
I agree that it's an interesting juxtaposition, but we really just need to focus on the rights of women. And for those who are concerned about the economy, they need to start looking at how preventing women from getting abortions harm the economy. In Louisiana, we've looked at the number of women who aren't allowed to enter the workforce because of the current restrictions we have in place. And that comes out to a harm to the economy of $1.8 billion per year. And that's exactly what 50 companies in Texas and around the nation said in a statement about this Texas law, that we are talking about harming the United States economy with billions of dollars in impact. And so if there are folks out there who are concerned about the economy and they're concerned about the rights of women, then they really need to think about the importance of allowing reproductive health and all of its options to be presented to those women in the situations where they need to contemplate next steps.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. We will take some calls as we move along in our remaining time with Nora Ahmed, legal director for the Louisiana ACLU. Mary Ziegler, who's been a guest on this show, Florida State professor of law, wrote in the New York Times a few days ago, a major confrontation on the abortion battlefield looms when the Supreme Court is expected to hear arguments on whether Mississippi can ban abortion after 15 weeks. That's roughly 9 weeks before viability, the point at which states are now allowed to forbid abortion. To uphold Mississippi's law, the court would have to eliminate its own viability rule or reverse Roe v. Wade altogether. Now, that's another case that is being followed closely, and it's not as sweeping as the one in Texas, Nora, but if the court were to uphold that law, it would have major implications as well, wouldn't it?
Extraordinary implications. It would change this country's precedent and the way that we operate as citizens, as abortion providers, as health practitioners. So that the court is being asked to overturn Roe v. Wade. And we're going to hope that they understand their obligations under stare decisis and what this country and our Constitution stands for, and that they're going to do the right thing and say, we've said it before, we've said it again, that the state is not allowed to get involved when we're talking about the pre-viability stage of a fetus. This shouldn't even be up for debate.
All right, 877-217-5757. It's time for a 90-second break. We'll return in a minute and a half with more from Nora Ahmed. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We continue with Nora Ahmed, Louisiana ACLU legal director. Nora clerked for the Honorable Jack B. Weinstein of the Eastern District of New York. She spent 7 years litigating for one of the country's largest law firms, has a master's in teaching from Fordham, a Bachelor of Arts from the University of Oregon's Honors College, and she's been in Louisiana now for about 2 years, and she is here commenting on what's going on in our country, Texas and Mississippi in particular. The measure in Texas and a New York Times examination of it says the measure will create nearly insurmountable obstacles for certain vulnerable populations. Abortion providers contend that teenagers who often don't realize they're pregnant until later in a pregnancy, low-income people who need to find about $550 to cover the cost of an abortion, and people of color, including undocumented immigrants. 70% of abortions in Texas in 2019 were provided to women of color, according to statistics that have been provided from various sources. 877-217-5757. Please be brief. We now have a few people in line to talk with Nora Ahmed, and we start with June in Lafayette. June, excuse me, you're on with Nora.
Hello, hello. I wanted to address the point that the question that you made a little while ago about the irony of it, that the same people who are demanding the right to choose life or death by being vaccinated or not are denying women that same right to choice. That just seems back. I mean, it's ironic.
All right.
They want freedom to do one thing, but are denying women freedom to do another something.
All right. Well, June, and I'll let Nora answer, but there are many scholars who believe that it is not a complete human life. It's 5 weeks or 7 weeks. It's an undeveloped baby in the womb, and so it's viewed differently than a living, breathing person. And in this case, we know people are dying because they're not being vaccinated. But Nora, would you like to expound on that?
Yeah, the whole point here is, what is viability? And we have precedent, and we know that that does not exist until 24 weeks. So this notion that we can start getting involved with an embryo and a fetus before it is life does not make sense. And I would say that when you're talking about the mask mandates, we are talking about preventing the death of viable life. And that's why the question before the Supreme Court right now in that Mississippi case is whether states can even get involved at this pre-viability stage.
Rose in Mid-City. Rose, you're on the air with Nora Ahmed. Hi, Rose.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Nora. I just want to say that women have fought for their right to vote. They've fought for their right to control their bodies. And yet, no one's come up with a law that says that women can sue men when they don't want to take responsibility. What about that question?
I think that is an extraordinary question, and that is why we have to ask why state legislatures feel as though they have the right to police the bodies of women.
Dan,
if we're not policing the bodies of men or anyone else in this similar way.
We go downtown. Dan, you're on with Nora Ahmed. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yeah, Ms. Ahmed. Will the politicalization of the judicial branch of government by the Republican Party pretty much guarantee a return to back alley abortions?
Is that where we're headed?
We can hope not. I mean, I think when you do this work, you have to remain somewhat optimistic that we're not going to see the courts condone mayhem in the streets. But we definitely are in a position where that could happen if Roe is overturned. I think what we're more likely to see is a splitting of the baby that potentially allows certain types of restrictions, but doesn't fully overturn Roe or Casey. But it is extraordinarily dangerous territory, and you start to get rid of rights by slowly bringing them backwards. And so I think we are starting to see that dialing back, which is extremely dangerous. And by the Supreme Court not getting involved here and effectively saying, hey, Texas, you tried to get around judicial review, good job, we're not going to get involved, we are starting to see that dialing back.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on the air.
Hey, what about the rights of the child that's killed? That's what this is about. The woman, anyone that has an abortion would not be prosecuted. It basically stops a doctor from killing a baby, which is illegal. You can't kill someone. And, you know, the ACLU likes to pick and choose, and it, and I get it, but then the ACLU actually opposed the Fifth Amendment.
All right. Patrick, believing, as many do, that this is the taking of a life, although our country right now takes lives through capital punishment, through wars, and these are people who are on the ground and living and breathing, but can you understand the passion from people like Patrick, who are so-called pro-life and believe passionately that this is murder?
I think it's very important to understand the other side of the debate, and I think what we're really getting to is a question of when can a fetus exist outside on its own, and that would not be at 6 weeks or 15 weeks. And that's why the debate really is about pre-viability and viability. So what we're hearing from Patrick is that viability exists, you know, on day one, even if a heartbeat's not detectable. And it exists at 6 weeks because we start to hear a flutter. So it is understandable that people have those views, but I don't think it's actually based in reality of when a fetus is actually viable.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And a listener asked if the Bible is an authority as far as prohibiting abortion. And I'm not a biblical scholar, but I've never seen abortion mentioned in the Bible. And Gary Wills, who's been with us, the great scholar, author of more than 50 books on Catholicism, he wrote a column in the New York Times a few weeks ago stating that there is nothing, absolutely nothing in the Bible about abortion. And, of course, Jesus never said a word about it. Jim and Walker. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. A couple of points here. The first one, of course, is that at 6 weeks, it's not a fetus. It is an embryo, and we should stop using the language of extremists. It's a it is not a fetus. As an embryo, there is not a heart, so there is not a heart to beat, and there is not a can't be a heartbeat law. In 2009, Colorado began offering teens free IUDs without parental consent. Within 8 years, teen pregnancies dropped 54%.
All right, now that's a point that is worthy, is that many of the same people who are against abortion are against any kind of birth control or any kind of instruction on birth control to people who might change their behavior and use protection and do things to keep from getting an unwanted pregnancy, Nora.
And I think those are things we have to think about. That's why we talk about reproductive health. When we single out abortion, we're failing to understand that women have the right to be educated on all options. And by educating women on all options, we are going to end up with better results for our states and for our economies.
Clyde in Lafayette. Clyde, please be brief. You're on with Nora Ahmed.
Good morning. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to the show who agree with the Texas law. It's in place. However, I haven't heard anything about anybody willing to adopt these children that are going to be products because these women can't get the abortions.
All right. I remember an amendment was offered that would require Louisiana lawmakers to adopt kids when they voted for restrictive abortion laws. But you know, some of the people who are pro-choice, like Mary Landrieu, she adopted two children. And many of those who are pro-life, they're not standing in line to adopt children, Nora.
I think it's an extremely important point, because when we start to understand that it's our most marginalized communities that are often seeking abortions, we're also talking about people who don't necessarily have the money to raise those children and the time to care for them in the way that they need to. So we're effectively putting these children up for adoption.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Nora Ahmed, and then we go to Mark Ballard. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Nora Ahmed, and then we'll hear from Mark Ballard of The Advocate. Still time to get in under the wire with Nora. We're talking about the restrictive abortion law in Texas, and there's one in Mississippi, too, that the Supreme Court is scheduled to hear. Steve in Mid-City. Steve, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Thank you, and thank you for the discussion. Nora, does the ACLU have a position on the idea of abortion based on gender? I know sex can usually be determined, I think, around 12 weeks. If that was the motivation for abortion, I just wondered if the ACLU had a position on that. Thank you.
Nora?
I mean, our position is that Roe v. Wade and Casey are good law, and that is where we stick with this notion of pre-viability and viability. And in terms of these other discussions, if we're talking about 12 weeks, that still doesn't hit that 24-week viability assessment.
877-217-5757 is our number. Matt in Shenandoah. Matt, you're on with Nora.
Yes. My question for the ACLU is, what position did y'all take in Virginia when they were proposing the infanticide abortion bill? Were y'all at what point in time would the ACLU ever show up and advocate for the child unborn or born in the case of?
All right. What about? he's terming it infanticide. I think you would view it far more differently. And Virginia is a relatively conservative state. I don't think the people of that state view it as infanticide either. But Nora, your thoughts?
I think the ACLU stands by the 50 years of precedent that we had. For us, this is not really a controversial question. We're just seeking to make sure that the Constitution of the United States is upheld and the Supreme Court has ruled on what our Constitution stands for 50 years. And so we are not talking about infanticide. We are talking about what does it mean for a state to get involved with a woman's right to choose.
Now, a listener notes that when Amy Coney Barrett of New Orleans replaced Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the court, it potentially made a difference on the vote on abortion. And I think that was in play 5-4. I think she was in the majority. Amy Coney Barrett was, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg would almost certainly have voted differently. Your thoughts?
I think that's very true. And we're going to have to wait to see what actually happens with this Mississippi law. We're going to see where the Supreme Court lands on Roe v. Wade very soon. But having a makeup of the court that is significantly different will mean that we're going to get different kinds of decisions on these critical issues. And what I unfortunately think we'll see is a little bit of a dialing back. I don't think we're going to see a full overturn of Roe v. Wade, but we are going to see ways that this court tries to dial back that right.
Nora, it is good to catch up with you again, and we look forward to a conversation again soon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jim. Have a great day.
You too. We're joined by Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. Mark covers all kinds of matters, and yesterday he was at the Public Service Commission meeting. If you read your newspaper today, graphic scenes of people having sex interrupted utility regulators at the PSC meeting on Wednesday, which was held over Zoom, and the five elected commission members were set to talk about electricity and phone service during Hurricane Ida, which is a controversial issue, and then they had to adjourn while staffers addressed unknown meeting participants who overtook the shared screen function to run explicit pornographic videos as commissioners tried to talk. Mark, it was a most unusual meeting.
It was a most unusual meeting, that is for sure. And two things that I found of interest there was that they were kind of hemmed in by the open meetings law, which allows everybody to show up, anybody, you, me, anybody, to show up to these meetings. But then when they got in, apparently the hacking that went on was the shared screen function, and they were and so they had to figure out how to keep the meeting open while dealing with the shared screen function. I think they got it because they were able to do the meeting after they dealt with all of this. So, and the other thing is, I think that this may have been some sort of acting out from a number of people who are extremely angry about what happened to our electricity during this storm and because of the storm.
Well, as you note in your story, that Ida destroyed 212 transmission structures, damaged another 296, more than 36,000 distribution poles, and 50,000 spans of wire went down, cutting electricity to almost 1.1 million customers, second only to the 1.3 million taken out by Gustav in 2008, and about 25,000 customers are still without power 25 days later now. So it is a mess, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. But on the other hand, they were able to get that power up fairly quickly, within 7 to 10 days for most of us. And if you recall back to like Gustav and Katrina, Rita, and
Andrew,
even back as far as Andrew, that we were without power for, you know, 2, 3, going on 4 weeks, depending on where you lived. So you have that, but you also have this sort of year after year after year after storm where it knocks down the infrastructure, and then you and me, what they call ratepayers, what I call customers, are required to pay to put that thing back up. And I think people are getting kind of tired of that.
877-217-5757. That number works for Mark Ballard as well as it did for Nora Ahmed. And Mark notes in his story about the PSC meeting that Commissioner Foster Campbell pointed out that the entire Republican congressional delegation voted against legislation to provide $28 billion in emergency storm recovery funds. Tuesday night, the Democratic majority in the U.S. House, on a 220-211 party line vote, approved funding the federal government through December 3rd and suspending the nation's borrowing limit until the end of 2022. The $28.4 trillion debt ceiling legislation includes more than $28 billion in disaster funding, with a large part of that amount headed for Louisiana if the bill makes it through the U.S. Senate, and Republicans have vowed to block it. We don't know for sure how Kennedy and Cassidy will vote on this, but the debt ceiling was raised many times when Trump was president by these same Republicans. What's the difference?
The Democrats are doing it. So we're going to, I think that was what Foster Campbell's point was, is that, geez, this is only because the Democrats are doing it. The Republicans have a lot of reasoning behind why they didn't do it, you know, that it's going to say open up money that Democrats want to spend. And there's a whole lot of reasoning around it. And I think that we see that Cassidy and Kennedy, neither one of them have come out to say, I'm against the raising the debt limit, which includes that money. They've been kind of a cherry on that, and we'll see how they actually do feel and whether they will go against Mitch McConnell and the Senate.
It is curious, though, that the debt went up $8 trillion under President Trump in 4 years. Went up $8 trillion under Obama, but that was in 8 years. $8 trillion in 4 years, and there was never a discussion from Republicans about shutting down the government by not raising the debt ceiling, and what this would do to the stock market, for, say, people's 401ks. I can't imagine in the end that the Republicans would allow this to happen, but, Mark, you never know.
Partisan. partisanship. I mean, we're talking about six congressmen from the state of Louisiana, which is in desperate need of disaster funding. And they voted against it because of some theory, a partisan political theory. You know, it may be valid why they voted against it. I'm unsure about that. But they did vote against sending billions of dollars to their constituencies.
Yeah, well, let's see what happens. Obviously, this is an issue in which it sounds good to be a fiscal conservative and a deficit hawk. But if the government doesn't continue to run, there will be hell to pay and pain that will be inflicted as a result of that. And some would say this is a fight that should have happened a long time ago. When Bill Clinton left the presidency, the debt was at about $4 trillion. Now it's at $28 trillion, 20 years later, a little over 20 years later. Where were all these people through the years? 877-217-5757. Henry at the Country Club. Henry, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Marcus. Great hearing y'all this morning. You're talking about Entergy and their rate structure and rebuilding the infrastructure and everything and burying the lines and whatnot. They always talk, like Mr. Mark said, about putting all these costs on the ratepayers. But, you know, in any other business, the stockholders are the one that take the gamble, and they, you know, get the opportunity to reap the rewards when they cash in. I know that with three Republicans on that Public Service Commission, they'll never get that approved. But has there ever been any talk? And what do we need to do to get Foster Campbell two more votes? Thank y'all.
Maybe just one more vote. Just one more vote.
We basically have to win the elections. I mean, elections have consequences, and that's what it is. However, this is not an issue that the PSC can do. It is in law supported by the Constitution that the PSC can look over the business dealings of a shareholder-owned utility like Entergy, and they can decide whether the spending that they're doing is prudent or not, but they cannot and will not, and because they cannot legally go in and force Entergy to pay for restoring the power, for upgrading its system. That is the duty, according to law, of us, the customers.
877-217-5757. We're headed to the last quarter hour with Mark Ballard of The Advocate. We do have to take a short break, and it's good to hear from Henry. We've got some folks waiting in line, but we'd still enjoy hearing from you if you're so inclined. And it's about time for Savash, Henry's neighbor at the Country Club, to call. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're talking with Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief from The Advocate, about what's happening in our world. We do have some people who are in line to talk with Mark. David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, Trump said the stock market would crash if he's not reelected. Dow Jones is up over 400 points right now. You know, $7.8 trillion was added to the nation's debt when Trump was in the White House. Steve Scalise was a big gung-ho supporter of those tax cuts for the wealthy that were unfunded, that didn't do a whole lot for the economy. We never had more than 2.5% growth. And now Steve Scalise is telling his fellow Republicans, vote against raising the debt limit like Mitch McConnell has done. And that could cause Social Security checks not to go out. And according to the Washington Post, we could have a 33% decline in the stock market.
All right. Well, David is a partisan, and he makes some points that are valid, but I doubt that Steve Scalise is going to be swayed by any numbers.
This is a partisan issue, and it has more to do about what the goals and the fundamental goals are that the Democrats see for the nation versus what the Republicans see for the nation. In an era where we tend to be very angry in our politics to begin with. So,
877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. You know, if the Democrats added an amendment that would repeal Obamacare, the Republicans would vote for it in a heartbeat. Otherwise, what they're going to do is take credit for it and just not, you know, not support it. So.
All right. That's another hot potato, but...
it certainly is an opinion.
It is. All right, well... Another listener asks about your colleague, Andrea Gallo, who was sued by the state attorney general a few months ago, unsuccessfully, asking if there is anything analogous to the suit that former President Trump filed this week, accusing Mary Trump, his niece, and three New York Times reporters of conspiring in an insidious plot to improperly obtain his confidential tax records and exploit their use in news articles. Mark, the president, former president, he is going to court with his niece and with journalists, but somehow this isn't all that surprising.
Yeah, I it's a tenuous connection, I think, between Andrea and what's going on with the Trump family. So, but there is one thing that I guess could connect it is that all of these politicians talk about transparency. All of them talk about, you know, the need to share with the constituency, and all of them don't really mean it. And that goes back years, but their various degrees of being open, and I would say that the attorney general is one of those that is not very open. But talks an awful lot about transparency.
And Donald Trump has some surrogates. I mentioned the emails I get every day from the former president, and now I'm getting emails from his relatives. And here's one from his good friend Newton Leroy Gingrich, Ph.D., Tulane University. Jim, President Trump really needs your support. With all the anti-American propaganda coming from the left and their friends in the mainstream media, this country is hardly recognizable. One thing has become clear. Wokeism is a cancer to American society as we know it. President Trump fought day and night to preserve our American identity, and now it's your turn to join him. Trump Gold memberships are reserved for President Trump's strongest America First patriots like you who love our country. I've been told there's a spot for you on the roster, but only if you act today. That's from Newton Leroy Gingrich.
Who is, it's obvious that the president is, the former president is going to run again. And he's raising money, and from what I read, a substantial portion.
Yeah, raising lots of money, and these people do not give up. But
most of the emails I get from the Trump supporters are basically screeching at me about, being a communist or a Nazi, depending on where they're coming from, because I don't march with straight legs towards the Trump people believe.
Ray in Prairieville. Ray, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Thanks for taking the call, Jim. Just one question from Mr. Ballard. In Eugene Robinson's column today, he talks about the different climate change problems and mentions China with their coal-powered electric plants. But he doesn't mention that Louisiana still has four coal-powered electric generating plants. I'm a little surprised at that, and I'd like Mr. Ballard's comments.
All right, Mark.
Well, yes, they do. They still have coal-fired plants. Some of them are the newer versions that do not don't pollute as much. But, yes, we still have coal-fired plants, and take them out is going to cost several billion dollars, of which we're going to have to pay for it. So there is a kind of a balancing act that goes with that.
You have another story today in The Advocate about a high volume of calls for disaster food stamps. You say the applications are steady. What's going on here?
Well, they had a phone system that's set up with about 1,500 phones in it. They could handle 1,500 calls at any one time. But they were giving
they were getting tens of thousands of calls that flooded the system. It basically paralyzed those who could get in, had to sit and wait for hours, and those who couldn't get in, they just got, you know, busy signals or nothing at all on the phone. And so it caused a lot of consternation among people. They've been working to get it out. They've taken in 41,509 phone calls since the three-week application period started on Monday. And so, I mean, they're doing what they can. The traffic jam is less because they apparently had a whole lot of people that called in. It wasn't their turn. And the traffic jam has gotten less as the week goes on, largely because I think people either stopped calling in or they took a look at what the schedule was and said, oh, wait, I should wait until my turn to call. So that's where it's at. So.
Another listener refers to a story you wrote about a week ago regarding the U.S. News and World Report college rankings. And this is Hal on Bluebonnet noting that this Saturday's game between LSU and Mississippi will pit the bottom two schools in the Southeastern Conference in those rankings. LSU was 13th and Mississippi State 14th, Mark. Not a good rating for LSU, unfortunately.
It's not, but there's, you know, there's a new president in town and he's trying to turn things around. And you got to consider, actually, I looked at it as dropping 19 points was that basically, I mean, last year was not a very good one for LSU. You know, when you look at the kind of a nationwide sexual harassment scandal, and you can't call it anything but a scandal, and you're looking at basically not much more money in the budget after 13 years of no money in the budget or in no increases and sometimes cuts. I mean, so LSU has a long road to hoe.
And I'm looking at the front page. Leah Skeen has a story about Kenneth Gleason, a young man who became a serial killer, killed two black men for the sake of killing them, including Donald Smart, the longtime dishwasher at Louis. These were executions. The other one was Bruce Cofield, who was shot and killed while sitting at a bus stop at Florida and South Acadian. Mr. Gleason, after being convicted of murder yesterday, hanged himself in his cell in Angola, and he's a dead man. He was quarantined for 14 days per protocols for new inmates. And, you know, death is never pleasant, but I doubt that there will be many tears for Kenneth Gleason, Mark.
Well, and there's probably going to be quite a bit of looking into Angola's systems because that he was killed while under isolation, I guess, is that, and or killed or he committed suicide under isolation. But yeah, these things kind of happen, and he only arrived on Monday, so I'm assuming that there was a plan all along.
Yeah, and he's 27 years old, a wasted life, but he took two lives, and including that of a gentleman I knew, Donald Smart, who was just walking to work for his nightly shift at 11 o'clock and gets gunned down in cold blood by this fellow for no good reason other than the fact that Donald is was a black man. It's one of those tragedies that unfortunately resonates. And there are other people who think like Kenneth Gleason who just don't go out and kill people. And that's a tragedy in itself.
I can't disagree with you. I think there's a lot of unresolved problems with racism in our state and in our country.
No doubt. Mark, thank you. And we'll be calling again next week. Keep up your good work, and glad you made it through an eventful PSC meeting yesterday.
It was eventful.
It was indeed.
It was eventful. All right. Thank you very
much. Take care. And we'll be back next week with more from Mark, but we'll be back tomorrow as well. Same time, same place for Alondra Villarreal. I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana. Stay safe and stay tuned.